Thanks for flying with us. Jordan here. Just wanted to let everyone know what's happening here at the Star Lores podcast. Star Lores is now on Discord. If you would like to join the Star Lores Cantina Discord server, you can find a link in the description or on any of our social media accounts. Reach out with a DM or email. We'd love to hear from you. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter by searching the Star Lores podcast. Go ahead and give our page a like and send us a message. You can also email at starlorespodcast@gmail.com. Send us your fan art, Star Wars collections, or fan fictions, and you may even get a feature on one of our pages or even the show. Don't be afraid to offer corrections or add to any of the topics that we discuss on the show. We are also on Patreon, so if you want to help us pay the bills, as well as get a few awesome perks like bonus episodes, access to the private Facebook group, or the VIP section of the Discord server, head on over to patreon.com/StarLores and sign up for as little as $1 a month. And finally, make sure to subscribe to us on your favorite podcatcher app or YouTube, as well as sending us a 5-star review on iTunes. This really helps us reach a wider audience. Enjoy the rest of the show.
You are listening to the Star Lores podcast. I find your lack of faith disturbing.
Why, you stuck up, half-witted, scruffy-looking nerf herder!
I was going into Tosche Station to pick up some power converters.
I got a bad feeling about this.
Inception.
Does the War Master truly wish a disquisition upon the New Republic's perverse system of government? It has to do with a bizarre concept called democracy, in which ruling power is given to whomever is most skillful at directing the herd instincts of the largest masses of their most ignorant citizens.
Nam Anor. During the Yuuzhan Vong War. The Woolamander, an arboreal creature from Yavin 4, is an interesting animal. The fur on their limbs and back are a deep blue, while that of their stomachs is white. They have stripes of orange fur vertically on their back. Their faces are red, orange, and black around the eyes. An impressive tail, almost twice as long as their body, often dangles below the tree branches on which they enjoy sitting. A tourist could be forgiven for mistaking the bell-like bulbs on their tails for a brightly colored flower, or even a mushroom. The tourist would then quickly pay for the lapse in knowledge, as woolamanders would often pelt passers-by with samples of their herbivorous diet. The trees are not the only habitat in which they thrive. Yavin is dotted with massive ziggurats and temple complexes built from stone. The ancient Sith Lord Exar Kun directed the Misasi to build some of these. In one of them, one can find numerous fine sculptures of the Woolamander. Inside the temple, one finds more than just the animal's graven image. It is filled with a rambunctious population of woolamanders. The reason for Kun's apparent fondness of the animal, nor why they live in the temple in such numbers, is unknown. Some have suggested that they are protective of it for some particular reason, but this may be explained by simple territory defense, tactic used by many similarly social animals. The building was eventually named the Palace of the Woolamander by a Rebel Alliance scout. It was in this odd building that the New Republic really began the project of administering a galactic state. On the first anniversary of the Battle of Endor, in the Palace of the Woolamander, the New Republic Provisional Council was established as an interim galactic government, and Yavin 4 as the temporary capital world. 4ABY. A few weeks have passed since the second Death Star was destroyed. In that battle, Darth Vader committed regicide on Emperor Palpatine. Luke Skywalker is recruiting and training Force sensitives for his new Jedi Order, now that the Empire's iron grip on the galactic community has been weakened into a mewling grasp. Han Solo is sorting through his feelings, as well as doing some cleanup missions for the Rebels. He has a lot to process. No longer an obscure outlaw chased around the galaxy from all corners with multiple bounties from different factions. Now he has wealth, power, even a fledgling romantic relationship. But it's all so strange for him. In the cockpit of the Millennium Falcon, he searches, paces wildly, looking for some harrowing adventure to calm his nerves. The Ewoks on Endor are too laid back for his tastes. The only thing that soothes his identity crisis somewhat is a strong and loving embrace from his longtime friend, Chewbacca. Chewie doesn't waste time assaulting Han with a pep talk and Shiriwook. Princess Leia Organa has a lot to do. The Alliance to Restore the Republic has in large part fulfilled the first part of their mission. The Galactic Empire has been shattered. Now they have to begin the arduous task of rebuilding a government modeled after the Old Republic, which the Empire systematically dismantled over the last quarter century. At least she doesn't have to do it alone. On her side is Mon Mothma, Admiral Ackbar, Borsk Feilaia, Indri Umseg, Sion Tev, Jensar Sobilis, Doman Burrus, and Carithrar, all longtime rebel commanders and politicians. These nine rebels were the signatories of the Declaration of the New Republic, the foundational document of that state. In it is a description of the fledgling state's aims: to restore democracy, freedom, and justice to the galaxy. Along with Imperial allies, the Shirruk invade Bakura. Luke Skywalker and a rebel task force repel the Saurian invaders and liberate the world from the Empire. But as soon as the dust settles and the blaster packs cool, it's diplomatic battles the rebels turned politicians have to fight. But then, hot wars and local conflicts would continue to plague the galaxy. Peace was not one of the ideals they sought to restore. 18 months later, Rogue Squadron launched an ambitious espionage campaign at Imperial Center. Using weather modification, sabotage, and finally Admiral Ackbar and the New Republic's fleet, they ripped the heart of the galaxy from the bosom of the Empire. All signs pointed to the upstart state finally defeating their enemy. The Provisional Council was then dissolved and replaced by the New Republic Senate, which relocated to its spiritual home, Coruscant. The day would be remembered annually in the Republic as a state holiday, Restoration Day.
Mon Mothma. We are not separatists trying to leave the Republic. We are loyalists trying to preserve democracy in the Republic. Quote, Mon Mothma. In 27 ABY, the New Republic was in dire straits. Having weathered numerous conflicts with warlords, criminals, their intergalactic neighbors from the Fire Fist galaxy, and now the relentless Yuuzhan Vong, it was a desperate government. They resorted to collaborating with their hated nemesis, the Galactic Empire. Mon Mothma was a state-of-the-art Imperial-class Star Destroyer, built in orbit above Coruscant. Among its terrifying arsenal were more energy-efficient gravity well projectors that were incorporated seamlessly in the hull. Removing the huge protruding domes characteristic of older Imperial-class vessels, in the hangar bay were a full complement of snub fighters of both Imperial and Rebel design, as well as a new cutting-edge starfighter, the E-Wing. This ship was armed with B-type laser cannons, which represented a significant upgrade from the X-Wing's armament. A new type of astromech unit was also created for the starfighter. Unfortunately, both the laser cannons and the R7 astromechs proved to be riddled with bugs, so the X-Wing continued to be the preferred vessel among the Republic's ace pilots. Like its namesake, Mon Mothma was a champion of justice and freedom in the galaxy. Like her, it also saw more than its share of fighting. On its first mission, it rescued a planetary population of refugees. It went on to fight a half dozen battles during the Yuuzhan Vong War, and was also active during the Swarm War. It is generally accepted convention in many navies to name ships after leaders who had a significant and lasting impact on the states they served. Mon Mothma certainly fits that description. At just 19 years of age, she was elected to the position of senator representing the Bormia sector in the Galactic Senate, setting a record for the youngest ever senator to serve. Some historians note that Leia Organa broke this record by a year, but she was elected to the Imperial Senate, which, although closely related, was a distinct governing body. Representing her constituents through the Clone Wars was a difficult task, but Senator Mothma was ever vigilant in protecting the rights of those she was sworn to serve. When Chancellor Palpatine began acquiring additional executive powers through various bills in the Senate, she was the most outspoken of at least 2,000 senators who feared what the Chancellor might do to their democracy, and thus signed the petition of 2,000, which outlined their concerns. Senator Mothma, with a cadre of other senators, presented the petition and their position to Chancellor Palpatine, who placated them with promises that he would resign his power at the conclusion of the war. Obviously, this didn't happen. The Empire all but abolished the rights that any local system had. A system's rights were a position Senator Mothma championed. One might wonder why she accepted a new post as senator in the Galactic Senate. She had other things in mind for the Galactic Empire than lying down and accepting its demands. Almost immediately, she set about finding allies in the Senate and throughout the Empire. Incredibly, she managed to be an outspoken critic of Emperor Palpatine. She defied his policies in public at every opportunity, yet managed to avoid being purged by the tyrant. This continued until her eventual arrest and subsequent escape to Rebel headquarters in 2 BBY. During the Galactic Civil War, she acquired tactical skills and was involved in the planning and implementation of many of the Rebels' famous actions. When Coruscant was recaptured, the New Republic Senate formed. She was elected as its chief of state. Chiefs of state were elected by votes cast by senators, and required a 50 plus 1% majority in order to be declared the winner. Should the chief of state be incapacitated or killed during their term, they were replaced either by the minister of state, any former chief of state, or any former minister of state. Considering her former objections to the executive overreach, it is strange that she wrote no bills designating a time limit for the chief of state's term of office. They could remain in power until death, they resigned, or the Senate voted them out. As such, Chief of State Mothma served for 11 years, at which point she resigned her position due to ill health. Her retirement was active, however, as she immediately began working for New Republic Intelligence and temporarily replaced her successor, Leia Organa Solo, as the Chief of State. 24 ABY was the gentle twilight of the New Republic. Luke Skywalker finally found time for scholarly pursuits. Han Solo was becoming a fine diplomat. And Lando Calrissian raked in profits hand over fist. A terrifying domestic terrorist group had just been destroyed. But just beyond the reaches of known space, darkness had already fallen. Agents of the Yuuzhan Vong had infiltrated the galactic community in preparation for their invasion of the galaxy. Mon's health had been declining in the years since she first retired. The nanomachines she'd been infected with had wreaked a slow havoc on her body. She had moved back to her native Chandrila, to the shore of Lake Saot. Perhaps she watched the sun set one last time over the lake's crystal clear water before going to bed one evening. Mon Mothma passed away quietly in her sleep. Chief of State, Organa Solo.
The second Chief of State elected was Leia Organa Solo. She ran for office directly after Mon Mothma stepped down, a theme that runs through many of the early Chiefs of States, are their intensely connected lives. In many ways, Leia was Mon Mothma, only younger. A born charismatic leader and military mind, but committed to freedom from the Empire and democracy. They served together on numerous rebel missions during the Galactic Civil War, and Mon Mothma was a mentor for Leia throughout these years. Perhaps after Alderaan's destruction, Mon Mothma filled the role previously held by Leia's mother, Breeha. Furthermore, Mon Mothma served as a kind of superior officer to Leia within the rebel military structure. During her term, Leia led the Republic through the Black Fleet crisis. A species of gracile, hairless primates from the Kurnak cluster, called the Yvetha, had also formed their own state, called the Duskan League, in the power vacuum that followed the Empire's collapse. The Empire conquered their homeworld, N'Zoth, and turned it into a massive shipbuilding center. The Yvethans were enslaved by the Empire and given a galaxy-class education in engineering and shipbuilding. After the Battle of Endor, they staged a coup on N'Zoth, started their own armament project, and captured a number of Imperial ships. Part of their navy consisted of ships that were part of an Imperial Reserve garrison, known colloquially as the Black Fleet. Over the next decade, they built a fearsome military. Initially friendly with the Republic, Yavethan leadership used diplomatic relations with Chief of State Organa Solo as a front for developing assets within the New Republic. The strategy effectively turned public opinion against Organa Solo, and many in the Republic viewed her as a warmonger. It was soon revealed that the Duskan League's contact with the Republic was in bad faith when they began a brutal war of expansion throughout the Kornak cluster and beyond. Among the many casualties of this war were the entire Khorasag species. As the conflict raged and rebel heroes were captured, public and political opinion of Leia's handling of the crisis deepened. Senator Burris presented a vote of no confidence to the Senate. Senator Felaya used this as an opportunity to further his own political ambitions and began campaigning for the position of interim chief of state, though he was ultimately unsuccessful. The Black Fleet was eventually defeated in orbit above Inzoth, thanks to the ancient powers used by Luke Skywalker. In total, Leia was chief of state for 10 years. Unsurprisingly, her two terms were marred with intense circumstances. She was kidnapped, her children were kidnapped, and multiple wars and small-scale conflicts erupted throughout New Republic territory. Frustrated with the wanton slaughter of galactic politics, Leia temporarily retired. To fill her days, she co-piloted with Han aboard the Falcon. In the interim, Senator Gaverson was elected as chief of state. Among his political achievements were being the first non-human chief of state, as well as the signing of the Pelion-Gaverson Treaty, which finally ended the Galactic Civil War. Then, in 21 ABY, Leia was again elected chief of state. This term was marginally less bloody than her first. In 23 ABY, Leia resigned her position for a final time.
Arcry.
Many Bothans died to bring us this information.
As even a cursory understanding demonstrates, galactic history is rotten with genocide and speciesside. Attached to this kind of ideologically based violence are often a culture of scapegoating the others, the foreigners, or the aliens. Belief in grand conspiracies and a tenuous grasp of reality often fuels such violence. In the Bothese language, there is a word for a specific form of socially sanctioned genocide: Arcry. Attached to the word is an ancient and bloody custom. When a Bothan leader declares Arcry on an enemy, it signifies the leader's conviction that the survival of the Bothan species is under existential threat. All able-bodied Bothans are compelled to pick up arms or go to war against the enemy. Simple victory is not what a declaration of Arcry is meant to bring about. Every single individual of the enemy's forces, be that enemy a single person, an army, or species, is marked for death. Surrenders are not accepted. Mercifully, Our cry has only been declared 3 times in recorded history. Despite the disturbing implications of this ancient custom, Bothans have been happy members of the galactic community almost since its very inception. And Bothan Space was an early member of the Old Republic. Bothan society has a long-standing tradition of space exploration and mercantile arts and espionage. Few Bothans demonstrate these traditions more clearly than Borsk Fela. As a young Bothan, Borsk first earned a living with business ventures in resource extraction, merchandising, logistics, and real estate on Kothless. Perhaps bored with the business world, or else tempted by greater power and fame, he became involved in Bothan politics. Thanks to his accumulated resources, contacts, and influence, he successfully ran for the office of Chief Counselor of the Bothan Council. The council was the government that presided over Bothan space, so the new position represented a quantum leap in terms of personal power. When the Empire began inflicting its new order on the galaxy, Counselor Fei La learned of their humanocentric policies. He knew it was only a matter of time before Bothan space was just another name on an ever-growing list of victims of the Empire. While still Chief Counselor, he joined the Bothan Spynet. This galaxy-spanning espionage and intelligence network had already been in existence for 3 centuries. Bothan members of the Spynet used a philosophical text called the Bothan Way as their guiding intellectual framework. In it, Bothans were instructed to put one's own interests above any other beings. The interests of one's clans before other Bothan clans, and the interests of the Bothan species before all other species. Although they recruited members of other species, this was for purely strategic purposes. For example, in infiltrating environments where the presence of a Bothan would attract undue scrutiny, command roles were filled largely by Bothans. Since self-interest was of high importance, a large part of the Spynet's activity was purely commercial. They sold their data and intelligence to the highest bidder, no questions asked, unless it violated one of their other 2 principles of the Bothan Way. During the Galactic Civil War, they sold their services to both the Empire and the Rebels. Despite this duplicity, Borsk's sympathies lay with the rebels, as he believed that the Empire's downfall was inevitable, but he needed to defend Bothan interests against it in the meantime. By the time the Galactic Civil War was in full swing, Fela had achieved a high station as both a member of the Bothan Spynet and a faithful servant of the Rebel Alliance. When the Death Star 2's plans were acquired by his fellow spies, he was quick to point out to anybody who would listen that it was Bothan intel that led to the destruction of the Empire. It was the sacrifice of Bothan lives that undid the injustice of a specious Empire. He used this event as a tactic for gaining sympathy and influence throughout his career in the New Republic. Borsk was one of the 9 signatories of the Declaration of the New Republic, and was also elected first to the New Republic Provisional Council, and later to the Inner Council. Within the Republic, he saw Admiral Akbar as a threat to his ambition, and the two came into frequent political conflict. The defensiveness and hostility he felt towards Akbar was extended to the entire New Republic military, as it was fiercely loyal to the legendary Mon Cala Admiral. Although ruthlessly effective in advancing his own and interests of Bothans, Counselor Fei La was disliked and not entirely trusted by many in the Republic. he frequently used the specter of speciesism and humanocentrism as a rhetoric device to undermine the interests of chiefs of state Mothma and Organa Solo. Mothma was likely unsurprised by Fela's blatantly self-serving recriminations. Back when he served in the military, he made it clear to Mothma that he expected a high-status leadership role from the beginning. Despite what some viewed as character flaws, Borsk was nothing if not competent in all of his work. He had a deep network of contacts from every corner of Imperial space, and had complete access to the most sophisticated spy organization in the galaxy. Though his duties in the rebellion were primarily non-combatant, he could hold his own in a firefight and had no shortage of personal courage. He had command experience in both military and astropolitics. Naturally, Chief of State Mothma made her distasteful rival a trusted advisor. Even so, he had no problem publicly criticizing the Chief of State's every decision. He could practically taste the most powerful position in the galaxy during the Black Fleet crisis when a vote of no confidence was called. Fela acquired additional political influence when he chaired the Justice Council and became member of the Ruling Council. 5 years later, in 23 ABY, he finally reached his highest goal. After Chief of State Organa retired, he was elected to that same role. Then Admiral Akbar retired. Mon Mothma was dead. It took decades, but he had finally won the game of Galactic Dejarik. His rivals were gone. Although the next 2 years were relatively peaceful compared to the conflicts of prior administrations, a fair amount of tragedies also occurred in the first half of his term. The Diversity Alliance sabotaged industry, committed numerous acts of piracy, and overthrew governments under Borsk's gaze. Their ideological standpoint can loosely be described as anti-human and anti-Jedi. They viewed the carnage inflicted on non-human species throughout the Galactic Empire's reign as being a result of an explicitly prejudiced and pervasive worldview among humans. This is a pretty easy conclusion to come to, considering the Empire's explicitly xenophobic policies and numerous acts of genocide, and its predominantly human leadership. While the near death of the Empire and formation of the New Republic did away with any legally codified forms of xenophobia throughout much of the galaxy, members of the Diversity Alliance believed that the xenophobia that was so much a part of the Galactic Empire had not gone away under the New Republic. Rather, the humans were simply lying about it now, while simultaneously furthering humanocentric interests. The humans had to be dethroned in the galaxy by any means necessary, up to and including terrorism and asymmetric warfare. Their anti-Jedi stance was closely connected to their anti-human beliefs, and likely had much to do with recent atrocities committed by human force sensitives. The Diversity Alliance was eventually defeated by a squad of Jedi Master Luke Skywalker's students, and in space by a fleet commanded by Han Solo. Imperial holdouts calling themselves the Second Imperium took offensive military actions against the Republic, though they ultimately lost the conflict and were mostly wiped out. Some senators viewed Fela's election as proof that humanocentrism had finally been excised from the New Republic. Despite this, Borsk was ever on guard for plots created by devious humans to diminish his personal power. This paranoia led to grave consequences. When reports of the Yuuzhan Vong's first moves in their invasion found their way to the chief, he dismissed them as falsehoods, masterminded by the Jedi to weaken him politically. A civilian commander-in-chief of the Republic Army, it was his responsibility to order them to mobilize against threats to the Republic. But believing the threat to be some incredible propaganda effort, he did nothing. And the Vong were practically uncontested as they marched through the galaxy and took up strategic positions against the Republic. Even the destruction of Cernpedal did not convince the chief of the imminent threat already in the galaxy. In fairness, the destruction of the world initially appeared to be the same kind of freakish natural disaster rather than a strategic attack by an immensely powerful enemy. Only after more worlds and countless innocent beings were annihilated by the invaders did Fela come to accept the reality of the war he was on the losing end of. Even when he did fully commit the military to an all-out war against the Vong, his administration's handling of the war was heavily criticized. 2 years into the calamitous war, a diplomatic delegation from the Vong visited the Senate on Coruscant in advance of their invasion of the world. The Vong spokesbeing demanded that the new Jedi Order be remanded to Vong custody. Fela refused their demands and pledged his support to the Jedi, in contrast to his every interaction with them to date. Coruscant was then invaded. After subduing the planetary defenses, a Vong commander and 25,000 warriors marched on the Imperial Palace. The commander demanded the New Republic surrender, but was rebuffed by Fela. During the meeting, Fela sent a final transmission over the holonet, declaring our cry on the Yuuzhan Vong. The Vong commander killed the chief for his insolence. When his heart stopped beating, a transceiver attached to it signaled explosives in the palace to detonate, destroying half the building and killing all of the invaders. Although the loss of such a large contingent of infantry stung, it didn't do much to stop the onslaught. Coruscant remained under Vong control until the end of the war, and like many conquered worlds, its climate and biosphere was drastically altered by Vong forming. After the defeat at Coruscant, the New Republic made the oceanic world of Dak their capital. That same year, 27 ABY, is also generally recognized as the end of the New Republic. The destruction caused by the merciless Yuuzhan Vong was too much for the youthful galactic state to survive. Senator Cal Omas of Alderaan was the final chief of state of the New Republic, elected after Fela's death. It subsequently reformed as the Galactic Federation of Free Alliances, and that state is legendary in its own right.
Welcome aboard the Millennial Falcon, and today we are giving our lovely listeners a civics lesson.
Indeed.
Define unicameral legislative body, because that's what the New Republic is.
Never heard of it.
Okay, so in government, unicameralism is the practice of having a single legislative or parliamentary chamber. Thus, a unicameral parliament or unicameral legislature is a legislature which consists of one chamber or house.
Okay, so no like House and Senate.
I guess that's...
It's all one body.
That's how it works. Yeah, the New Republic is basically the council, right? All the senators who represent... And there's some weird
Well, even parliamentary democracies have a House and a Senate as well.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. As far as I can tell, it's pretty much just the Senate. Yeah. And then planetary governments have like, they're right. all independent.
Yeah. Yeah.
There is some weird like fluidity though, in terms of who exactly senators are representing. Like sometimes, like with Mon Mothma, for example, she represented the Bormia sector, right? And so sectors of the galaxy are kind of like states, right? They encompass a big range of territory and a bunch of worlds in them. But then sometimes it says it's like the senator from a specific world.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like plastic. I think some authors just weren't double checking on what exactly a senator meant.
Well, certainly in like the prequel trilogy, you know, obviously senators from Naboo.
Yeah, she's representing Naboo. Right?
Yeah, it's only a single planet. It seems to be only suggested that senators, like planets, select their senators. But yeah, in this, it seems that entire sectors select a senator.
Yeah, and even I can't think of a specific example, but in reading about like imperial government and stuff,
yeah,
I also find that same thing of like this senator is a senator of this sector, but then this other senator is a senator of a world.
Yeah, you know what? And come to think of it, it would be like impossible. How do you represent every planet? If
that's what I was just going to bring up. So at the Republic's height, I think there was like 600,000 worlds or something.
Right. Yeah.
And
you can't have a Senate chamber of 600,000.
Fair play. The Senate chamber on Coruscant. If you don't remember what that looks
yeah,
like,
yeah,
it's where
yeah.
Palpatine and Yoda had that big lightsaber battle. Very big, but I don't think 600,000 yeah. senators.
It looked like it could have been a few hundred, but certainly not hundreds of thousands.
No, I don't think so. Because, and then you got to think every senator has like his whole, you know, menagerie of sycophants around him as yeah. well. So it's like,
well, also like you being a senator would at that number, it would be a very weak position to have. Like you wouldn't have that much influence being a single senator of 600,000. Yeah.
It wouldn't really make much
yeah.
sense.
It would almost be like it, like your single vote as a citizen of a country of 600,000 or a city of 600,000. Like it's almost irrelevant.
Although maybe we could throw this into our hashtag, the Empire did nothing wrong, bin. And that's part of the reason why the Republic was so ineffective is because they had
maybe
a gazillion senators yeah. and they could never do anything.
Maybe they all just zoomed in for their votes.
Yeah. Why?
Or Skyped in.
That's a good question, actually. In the land of Star Wars, when clearly, you know, you can transmit messages over these huge distances on holograms and stuff, why do they meet in person on Coruscant?
Yeah, who knows?
Anyway, so we've covered unicameral legislative bodies. That's worth 10 points on the quiz. So xenophobia, this is like very much our space racism episode, I feel like. And that was sort of accidental. It's just that's sort of what's in the New Republic's
yeah.
story. So it's interesting that we've got this very xenophobic government in the Galactic Empire. And then, of course, in the New Republic, our first two chiefs of state are also humans.
Yeah.
And so that's got to sting a little bit if you're a member world of the New Republic and you're maybe a little mad, a little miffed at all the genocide that's been done by humans
totally.
And Force sensitives.
Yeah.
Like I can kind of identify with the Diversity Alliance in their
position. I think certainly in the context, you know, it would be sort of like, you know, the abolition of slavery or something. You the fall of the empire would all of a sudden be all these species.
It's not like the abolition of slavery. It's literally the abolition yeah. of slavery.
Yeah, in many cases,
slavery was made illegal again under the New Republic.
Right, and but then you had like entirely new voting contingencies and people, you know, people groups you had to win their favor over in a democracy to get their votes, right? So they actually became legitimate political actors And, you know, you had to fight for influence in that. So, it is, you can kind of understand the frustration and the suspicion of, you know, human leadership and all that kind of stuff. And they're trying to push out the non-humans out of the decision-making processes.
And especially with, like, with Leia, it gets even worse. I don't know if everybody, like, if it became widely known in the galaxy that she was the daughter of Darth Vader.
Right, yeah.
but if it was, it's like being the daughter of Hitler.
Yeah, that's
being
true.
Elected as president, yeah. Right? It's like, what?
No. Yeah. No, I think it would be more like being the daughter of Himmler or Goebbels.
Because, yeah, that's true.
Because Hitler would be Palpatine.
Yeah, but he was just a right-hand man. Yeah.
Still pretty bad, but...
not a great look if you're a politician.
Totally.
To have a genocidal maniac father.
Did you know that in Italy, Mussolini's grandson is a politician?
It doesn't surprise me a single bit.
Just, yeah, that just made me think of that. But
Italy's a fun country.
Yeah. So
so then Borsk Feilaia, I kind of like his character. He has, like,
it's interesting.
He has a really interesting arc.
It's very, like, it's actually very believable.
That's part of the thing. Yeah,
that's like a lot of how politicians come to power, you know.
He started out with a bunch of random business ventures, kind of, and then he sort of saw, like, okay, I'm pretty good at this, but I still want something more.
Yeah, but then
next?
He got involved in intelligence and the military and all that.
That was actually after he got involved in politics.
It's interesting. Yes, but I'm saying on his rise to the top position, that was part of his resume, you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. He became a spy while he was essentially the president of Bothan Space.
Yeah.
Which is interesting. So he's like he's an effective sort of brassy dude. He can go out there and do sort of 007 type of stuff.
It seems like he kind of became like almost a career politician type and finagled his way to the top. Almost reminds me of like a Joe Biden or something like that. You know,
but I don't know enough about Joe Biden.
Just like career.
I know far more about space politics than Earth politics.
I was just trying to find an analogy that would be like.
I was thinking like West Wing or House of Cards would probably be the place to go to for an analogy for Borsk.
Well, House of Cards ain't so far from the truth.
And so Borsk, like, continually brought up this idea. This was almost sort of his, like, campaign platform.
Yeah.
Was sort of undoing the humanocentrism of the Empire and bringing up the fact that it was Bothans who... were responsible for getting the location and plans of the Death Star 2.
Yeah, I kind of love how wrote it that he sort of, it almost seems as if he played on the resentments of a lot of different species, non-human species, in order to establish his power and his political influence, you know?
Yeah, precisely. I think that's like exactly what he did. And especially when you get that context of the way, right? That text, that sort of the Bothan spies have to read and sort of follow as their code. And that's like very much in line with that text, right? Everything Borsk did was first for self-interest, then for Bothans, and then for everybody else, right? If it was always that, but then. At the end of his like sort of very selfish, self-serving, political finagling life, he has like that moment of clarity, kind of almost like Darth Vader. And it's very interesting that they give a turn like that to a character who's sort of a good guy, sort of a conflicted good guy because he is with the Republic, because he eventually does a 180 when the Yuuzhan Vong delegation visits the Senate. He's like, nope. you know what? Screw you guys. We're not surrendering. The Jedi have my full support. I'm not giving them up to you.
Yeah.
And then he tricks the Yuuzhan Vong into sending 25,000 warriors into the palace, and he blows them all away as his sort of final act and his redemption.
Is that a redemption, or is that like a revelation that, oops, I made the wrong decision, because he should have dealt with the Vong threat far earlier, and now he's realizing that there's no, like, he's sort of almost like a dog back into a corner, like there's no way out now.
How dare you call him a dog? Because the Bothans look very canid like. I think that's very humanocentric of you, and you need to do some real work on this, Jordan. Your humanocentrism.
I'm sorry, I need to.
Getting out of control.
I will check my privilege.
Check your human privilege, please.
Point of order.
Yeah, but I think, so I did read the comic, actually, where this specific event happens.
Okay.
You could read it, I guess, that this is just sort of like revenge. He just knows he's screwed and whatever. I'm just going to take as many people out as I can.
That's sort of how I interpreted it, but
I think in light of the comics, just how it's presented, is I think they were getting at he actually had a change of heart, and he realized he'd been wrong and he'd been doing the wrong thing and looking at things a very wrong way, and that he should have done it differently.
Yeah. Well, good intent. The road to hell is paved with good intentions.
It certainly is. And yeah, that's also another thing that it sort of reminds me of Scarface or something.
Yeah.
His rise is that as soon as he got into power, he got like uber paranoid about humanocentric people. Like he kind of did like, to invoke Godwin's law, he did kind of a Hitler turn, and he was like, the Jedi and the humans are plotting against me, and an entire world was destroyed, and he was like, it's a Jedi conspiracy, that didn't happen, it's fake news.
Yeah, exactly.
He was just like totally in denial,
yeah,
which is an insane thing.
Yeah, and another kind of funny, what was the Diversity Alliance?
The Diversity Alliance, yeah.
I thought that was kind of an interesting political action group, I guess.
And that's exactly.
Turned terrorist.
And I'll shed some more light on that too, is they were sort of ostensibly almost a like a social support agency or something.
Okay.
Is that was like their public face, was that they were just helping disadvantaged non-humans throughout the galaxy who'd been
and
obviously they have a point that humans have done a lot of damage to non-humans, and they were trying to repair that, but then sort of behind the scenes they were engaging in piracy and industrial sabotage and terrorism, and you know, there, I think there might be a trilogy, there's at least one novel, maybe a trilogy, I can't remember, about the Diversity Alliance and all the skullduggery, and
it is kind of interesting, like it turns into so vociferously anti-human, there, what humanophobia or something? Humanophobic,
humanocentrism, or they're humanophobic. Yeah,
yeah. That's what I'm saying. Is like they, you know, whether it was deserved or not, they hated humans so much that they ended up being humans' enemies. So, just an interesting.
Yeah, they sort of became the evil that they said that they were trying to defeat.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? Because it's what's at the basis of humanocentrism or racism or whatever it is just like hating people because of their essential properties, right?
Yeah.
And doing violence to them because of those, and then that's exactly what the Diversity Alliance ended up doing, was hating humans and being violent against them just because of their genetics, essentially, which is obviously not a fair thing to do. Not cool.
They certainly like diversity, except for one little...
They did.
One little part of that diversity, they're not big fans.
Twi'leks, Gamorreans, Foch. I don't know who else they had.
Did they have Wookiees?
Huts, Wookiees, I imagine. They're all in there. So Mon Mothma, also an interesting character. Her, the actress who played her, let me just quickly look up her name, because she, like, it's funny because Mon Mothma's scene is she only in Return of the Jedi?
I can't recall.
She might be in A New Hope.
Yeah.
At some point. But she's only on screen for like a minute or
two. Yeah, she's actually not in the films all that much.
Yeah, very, very little. Yeah. But the actress who portrayed her did, like, at least from what I found on Wikipedia, she did like a lot of work into like creating that character.
Oh, really?
The character of Mon Mothma. Like, it was a very big deal to her, and she was like super into it.
Huh.
And
is it one of those things where maybe in like the original draft of the script, she had a much bigger role, and then...
You know, I don't think so. No. I think she was...
You have two lines.
She was just an actress who appreciated the craft, and she's like, funny, I'm just going to do the best I can possibly do.
Yeah.
And so her take on Mon Mothma was that she was kind of a moon mother, if you will.
Yeah.
Because of that name, right?
And so, yeah.
So she really wanted to embody this sort of calm, cool, collected, yet very feminine sort of portrayal of Mon Mothma. And yeah, that was just, I just thought it was interesting how much work she put into it. Caroline Blackiston.
That's funny.
If you're listening, get in touch. I'd love to talk to you. And I appreciate your line. I actually did rewatch that line. Many Bothans died to bring us these plans. And yeah, she
probably said that because Fae La, like, really pressured her to say that. Yeah. Was like, you better give us a nod.
You better. And one last point about that, actually, though. If you'll remember, the battle over Endor was a trap.
Right.
The Bothan intel was leaked. It like, Emperor Palpatine wanted them to get that.
Okay.
But by all rights, the Alliance should have been destroyed at Endor, right? It was basically just because of, you know, Luke and the Force essentially getting in the way of things. But it's like, you didn't even really do a good job, Borsk.
Yes.
Yeah, they were supposed to find those plans.
Borsk is just, he's one of those guys who's like, yeah, he's like competent, but probably as like a politician, he's not that great and he's not that exciting. But he's an influence peddler, you know what I mean? So he kind of can finagle his way into top positions. That's kind of my read of him.
I think you're right. Like, although the thing he wanted obviously was being the chief of state all along. But then, as you see, once he finally got it, it's like,
he made all the wrong decisions.
It was too much for him. Yeah. Right. He should have just stayed in intelligence or something. And he was obviously super competent there.
Yeah. But then, he let his own ego get in the way. Right.
Then he just got paranoid and billions of people died.
Yeah, pretty much.
Good job, Borsk.
Yeah, well, at least he made the right decision in the end, I suppose.
Well, on that dour note, let's get out of the swamp that is Coruscant.
Indeed.
And head to greener pastures. Perhaps Lake Sa'ot.